I was in my brand new office over the P.F. Chang's at Park Plaza, around the corner from the Four Seasons and a block from the Public Garden, feeling almost as cool as Tina Fey. I just walked through the door that had Sonny Randall Investigations written on the outside, put on some coffee, sat down behind my rustic wood Pottery Barn desk. All in all, I was everything a professional woman should be, if you didn't count the Glock in the top right-hand drawer of my desk. There were two chairs on the client side of the desk, a small couch against one wall, and a table on the other side of the room that I used for painting when I needed to take a break from world-class detecting. It housed my pads and boards and a palette and all the other tools of a world-class watercolorist's trade.
"Forget about the gun," Jesse Stone said. "If somebody shows up and threatens you, just pull a paintbrush on them."
"What about the boxing classes you made me take?" I said. "You should see how good my right hand has gotten." I had signed up for a half dozen at the gym an old boxer named Henry Cimoli owned over near the harbor.
"Here's hoping you never need to throw it," he said.
Jesse, chief of police, Paradise, Massachusetts. On again, off again boyfriend. Mostly on over the past year. I had given in and started calling him that, my boyfriend, just because I hadn't found a better way to describe his role in my life. We were still together anyway, even though we were mostly apart, our relationship having survived the virus. We were official, as the kids like to say, even if we hadn't announced it on Instagram or wherever kids announce such things these days, in a world where they found everything that happened to them completely fascinating. Jesse and I had been as close as we'd ever been before the virus caused the world to collapse on itself. Now we'd once again grown more used to our own social distancing, and for longer and longer periods of time, him up in Paradise, me in Boston. But still official, at least in our own unofficial way. "I feel like Jesse and I are happy," I said to Spike the night before, over drinks at Spike's.
"Low bar," he said, "for both of you."
"Come on," I said. "I've got a stress-free relationship going, money in the bank, my own office. I've still got Rosie the dog. I've even lost 5 pounds. Not that you seem to have noticed."
"Just like a big girl," Spike said.
"Not as big as I was 5 pounds ago," I said. "You also still have ex-husband issues," he said, referring to Richie Burke. "Still in Boston, still in my life," as he raised his son from his second marriage. "Do not," I said.
"Do so," Spike said.
"You sound childish," I said.
"Do not," he said. "Do not, do not, do not."
Spike and I had been celebrating the fact that I'd finally gotten paid by Robert McGowan, who owned the second biggest insurance company in Boston. McGowan had hired me to prove that his wife had been cheating on him. This I did well over 2 months ago. Then he refused to pay and kept refusing until Spike and I had finally shown up at his office and Spike threatened to shut a drawer with McGowan's head inside it. That was right before I handed Mr. McGowan my phone and showed him the images of him in bed in a suite at the Four Seasons, Park View, with Lurleen from accounting, and wondered out loud who'd win the race to the divorce lawyers, him or the missus, once the missus got a load of what I thought were some very artsy photographs.
"You were only supposed to follow her," he said.
"Well," I said, "to put it in language you can understand, I thought I might need additional coverage." He'd proceeded to transfer the money over speakerphone from an L.A. branch of Wells Fargo while Spike and I watched and listened. On our way out of the office, McGowan had said to me, "They told me you were a ball breaker."
"Not like Lurleen," Spike had said.
I knew I could have handled McGowan myself. I brought Spike along just for fun. His mostly. He'd gone through a bad time during the pandemic, nearly having lost Spike's at the worst of it. But he'd come up with the money he needed at the last minute, thanks to a loan from one of his best customers, a young hedge fund guy named Alex Drysdale, who spent almost as much time in the place as I did.